This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine being banned from buying the fastest, I mean, the absolute most powerful engines in the world for your racing team.
Right, you just assume it's over.
Exactly, yeah. The immediate assumption is that you just lose the race. But what if, instead of packing up and going home, you figure out how to win using a vastly inferior engine?
Oh, just by, like, completely engineering the most flawless aerodynamics the world has ever seen.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Hyper-efficient aerodynamics.
Yeah.
And today, we're looking at this massive plot twist in global technology that is basically doing just that.
Yeah, and it completely upends the traditional, you know, linear way we look at the tech race, the whole idea where more computing power just automatically equals better artificial intelligence.
Right. And we have this incredibly dense and frankly, fascinating tech report today provided by our commentator, lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
It's a fantastic report.
It really is. And the mission for you listening, whether you are, you know, a tech professional prepping for a meeting or just an incredibly curious mind trying to make sense of the news, is to really understand what happens when a massive economy is completely cut off from top-tier hardware.
Because they don't give up.
No, they don't. They hack the software. They optimize to a degree that is, frankly, mind-boggling, and they start building this this robotic workforce that costs a fraction of what anyone else is spending. So, okay, let's unpack this. Because the sheer scale of adaptation we are seeing is unlike anything in recent history.
It really is. And my role here is to take all these seemingly isolated data points from the report, right? Like the open source software frameworks, the border patrol robots.
Yeah, the border robots are wild.
Oh, completely. And, you know, the bizarre spikes in the price of industrial gas. And I'm going to connect those dots for you. We're going to look at the clear overarching global picture of how severe constraints are forcing these just bizarre, rapid innovations across the entire geopolitical chessboard.
Well, let's dive straight into the software squeeze, because this is where the hardware limitations are forcing the most extreme evolution. And it's fundamentally shifting global AI usage.
Right.
So I was looking at the section on DeepSeek, who just worked alongside Peking University, to release a new open source framework called DSpark.
Right, DSpark.
And the best way I can think to conceptualize what they've done is, well, imagine you run a massive delivery company.
Okay.
And trade restrictions mean you literally cannot buy bigger delivery trucks. Your hardware is strictly capped.
Yeah.
So you figure out a mathematical way to pack your current smaller trucks 85% more efficiently.
Yeah. I mean, you can't change the physical limits of the microchips you have, so you just completely rewrite the logistical pathways. And DeepSeek is achieving this through a mechanical technique called speculative decoding.
Right. Speculative decoding. Yeah. I saw that term in the report, and it sounds incredibly dense.
It does.
How does that actually function under the hood? Like, what does it mean?
Right. So in traditional AI generation, you have this massive, highly capable model, right?
Yeah.
And when you ask it a question, that massive model has to burn compute power to generate every single word or, you know, token one by one.
Oh, wow. So it's doing everything?
Everything. It is computationally exhausting to fire up the biggest brain in the room just to write the word the or and.
That makes sense. It's like using a sledgehammer for a nail.
Exactly. So speculative decoding introduces a secondary, much smaller, lightning fast draft model. Think of it as like a junior assistant.
Okay, a junior assistant.
Yeah. And this smaller model rapidly guesses or drafts the next sequence of, say, 10, 20 words. Then the massive main model acts solely as a supervisor. It just glances at the draft and verifies it.
Wait, so the heavy lifter isn't doing the actual writing anymore. It's just proofreading the junior assistant's work.
You got it. And verification is vastly cheaper, computationally speaking, than generation. So by using this two-tiered system, DeepSeek has boosted their per-user generation speed by 60 to 85%.
That is huge.
And they do it without losing a single drop of accuracy. I mean, they are squeezing unprecedented speed out of older, restricted chips. And they're baking this directly into DeepSeek V4, which is releasing in mid-July.
Wow.
And they're releasing it alongside this completely unique Peak and Valley API pricing model.
Right. I read about that. It's similar to surge pricing for a rideshare app, but applied to artificial intelligence.
Exactly like that. During busy Beijing hours, say 9 a.m. to noon or 2 to 6 p.m., you pay double for their API.
Because everyone is using it.
Yeah. They are aggressively micromanaging their compute load down to the millisecond, because every single microchip is just a precious commodity.
That is fascinating. And this software-first survival strategy seems to be utterly upending the global market. I mean, the volume data provided in the report from the OpenRouter platform, it just seemed physically impossible to me at first glance.
The numbers are staggering. They really are. For 9 consecutive weeks, Chinese AI models have dominated global token consumption on that platform.
9 weeks.
Yeah. And in the last week of June alone, they processed over 20 trillion tokens.
20 trillion.
Right. And to put that in perspective, a year ago, the U.S. Big Three, so Google, OpenAI, and Anthropic, they controlled 72% of token requests.
Wow, so almost the whole market.
Basically. But today, their share has plummeted to just 33%, and DeepSeek alone is now eating up over 16% of all OpenRouter tokens.
Wait, I have to push back on this volume, though. Because how is this shift happening so violently fast? Like, are individual people just suddenly typing 20 trillion tokens worth of chat prompts into these specific models?
Yeah, it sounds crazy, right?
It does, because that volume shift feels way too massive for just, you know, casual human-driven use.
Well, what's fascinating here is we aren't talking about humans typing prompts anymore. The era of a human asking a chatbot for a lasagna recipe, that's a tiny, tiny fraction of the ecosystem now.
So what's driving it?
This volume explosion is being driven by AI agents. These are autonomous systems designed to perform complex, multi-step tasks without human intervention. And the biggest driver right now is autonomous coding.
Autonomous coding.
Yeah, coding tasks now make up over half of all token consumption on these platforms.
Wait, so the AI is just looping and talking to itself in the background?
Exactly. Millions of tokens just burned while you sleep. An AI agent is given a goal to, say, build an app. It generates the code, tests it, finds an error, rewrites its own code, tests it again, and it just loops this process thousands of times in seconds.
That reframes the entire scale of what we're dealing with.
It really does.
And it perfectly contextualizes an insight from former lawmaker Kunjin Kim in the report. He points out that while the global hardware game is visibly bottlenecked by export controls, the inference optimization market, you know, the business of making software run leaner and faster, is quietly exploding.
It's a massive boom.
Right. Human ingenuity is just squeezing every last drop of utility out of the silicon they already possess.
And we're seeing this hyper-optimization jump from text and code straight into visual media, too. Mm. I mean, look at ByteDance. They're launching CDance 2.5 in early July.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And the technical specifications there are just a perfect example of bypassing hardware limits through pure software engineering. This system can generate 30-second 4K resolution videos.
In 4K?
Yes. Complete with 10-bit color and fully synced audio, all in a single continuous pass.
So wait, no splicing scenes together, no rendering the video first and adding the audio later?
Nope, all at once. And processing video and audio signals simultaneously requires them to operate in the same latent space.
Latent space.
Yeah. Think of a latent space as this highly compressed mathematical sandbox where the AI understands the core concepts of both visual objects and sound waves at the exact same time. Building an algorithm lean enough to do that in one pass on restricted hardware, that is a breathtaking feat of software efficiency.
Wow. Okay, so all of this hyper-optimized software in the cloud is fascinating. But software eventually needs a physical body to manipulate the real world, right?
Right, absolutely.
And that introduces a whole new set of economic and physical constraints.
Well,
so let's look at the robotics boom, because this embodied AI is both incredibly practical and honestly a little unsettling.
Oh, for sure.
I was reading about UbiTech's new releases, and they have this U1 model, which is marketed as a hyper-real companion robot.
Yeah, and the media immediately latched onto the uncanny valley aspect of it.
Oh, yeah.
Calling it this creepy pop star figure. But the engineering under the hood is what actually matters here. The U1 features 88 separate servo joints for, like, highly fluid movement.
Wow, 88.
Yeah. It has a silicone dermal layer, and it runs an emotional AI system capable of reading and reacting to over 20 distinct human emotional states.
That is wild.
And more importantly, all of that processing happens locally on a relatively standard ROC chip processor.
Right, and the price tag is what really caught my eye. It starts at roughly $17,000.
Which is incredibly cheap for what it is.
Exactly. And contrast that with another UbiTech model, the Walker S2, which is doing this gritty government work right now.
Yeah, the Walker S2.
It was just deployed at the China-Vietnam border in Guangxi.
Yeah.
And it guides queues, speaks multiple languages, uses optical scanners to instantly check container IDs against cargo manifests.
Doing all of that.
Yeah. And then it feeds that data directly to human customs officials.
And it operates 24/7 because it features a self-swapping battery mechanism that takes under 3 minutes. I mean, it is deeply integrated into state infrastructure, and it literally never sleeps.
Okay, but I look at a hyper-articulated companion robot and an autonomous border patrol droid, and I have to ask, is this actually economically viable on a mass scale right now? Or are these just like expensive PR stunts to show off the software? Because $17,000 for a humanoid robot seems suspiciously cheap when everyone else is struggling with hardware constraints.
Well, the viability comes down to brutal, vertically integrated economics. China has spent years building the world's most complete supply chain, specifically for embodied AI.
Okay, so it's all in-house.
Exactly, because they control the extraction of the rare earth metals, the manufacturing of the servos, the battery cells, and the hyper-optimized software all within one domestic loop. Their manufacturing costs are 30 to 50% lower than the rest of the world.
30 to 50%, that's a massive advantage.
It's huge. And Morgan Stanley looked at this exact supply chain data, and they just doubled their 2026 forecast for Chinese humanoid robots to 50,000 units. The economies of scale are activating right now.
You know, lawyer Kung Jin Kim makes a really sharp observation about the dual nature of this deployment.
Right.
You have the Walker S2 at the border, representing the public sphere, you know, state security, and macro infrastructure.
Right.
But simultaneously, the U1 is entering the living room, the most intimate private sphere. These humanoids are unlocking both domains at the exact same time.
They are. And that aggressive push into the private sphere is already colliding with regulatory reality.
Oh, for sure.
On July 15th, new regulations take effect in China, targeting what they call AI personification services. The government is explicitly banning the provision of virtual lovers, or like virtual families, to minors.
Wow.
And they are requiring that any AI clearly state it is not a human being.
Right. I mean, you build a hyper-real, emotionally reactive silicone robot, and the state immediately has to step in and draw boundaries.
Exactly. The societal implications of an emotional AI companion are profound enough that the government is actively trying to close the gap between technological capability and social regulation, you know, before these hit mass adoption.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But building millions of autonomous AI agents in the cloud and thousands of physical robots on the ground, it introduces a harsh physical reality. You need raw materials.
Oh, absolutely.
And for you listening, this isn't just about high-level geopolitics. When the cost of building these machines skyrockets, that eventually trickles down into the price tag of your next smartphone, laptop, or car. We are looking at a massive upstream supply chain shockwave here.
We really are. We hyperfixate on the cutting-edge GPUs themselves, and we completely forget about the physical ecosystem required to actually turn those chips on. The demand for AI data centers is pulling the entire global supply chain taut, which is creating a severe upstream bottleneck.
Yeah, the report details how it isn't just NVIDIA chips getting expensive anymore. It's the foundational building blocks.
Right.
I was looking at the data on MLCCs, these tiny ceramic capacitors. Why is an AI data center suddenly causing a spike in the price of basic ceramic components?
Well, when a massive cluster of AI processors attempts a complex calculation, it causes these violent microscopic spikes in power demand.
Okay.
It needs an instant clean rush of electricity. And MLCCs, which are multi-layer ceramic capacitors heavily manufactured by companies like Japan's Murata, they act as tiny reservoirs.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, they smooth out that power delivery. Because AI chips draw so much power, the demand for these specific, highly reliable capacitors has just exploded. And that's leading to price jumps of 10 to 40% just this month.
Just this month. That's insane.
Whoa.
And it spreads beyond capacitors, right? PCB materials, the literal circuit boards the chips are mounted on, they're seeing massive price hikes.
Yeah, everything is going up.
Even the specialized industrial gases and valves used in the semiconductor manufacturing equipment itself are becoming prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
It's like suppliers who were previously just quiet background players suddenly hold immense global pricing power.
That's exactly what's happening. And in the middle of this intense supply chain squeeze, you have China's semiconductor giant, SMAC, attempting to build next-generation 5-nanometer chips without access to next-generation tools.
Right, because of the bans.
Because of export bans, yeah. They cannot acquire extreme ultraviolet or EUV lithography machines, so instead they are falling back on older, deep, ultraviolet DUV equipment.
Okay, trying to visualize this based on the report.
Yeah.
It's essentially like trying to paint a microscopic, hyper-detailed masterpiece using a standard thick paintbrush instead of a single hair fine-tip needle.
That is a perfect analogy. It requires incredible skill, multiple passes over the same silicon wafer, and it results in a staggering amount of wasted material. Because they are brute forcing the physics of the older machines, the yield, you know, the actual number of working functional chips they get per wafer is abysmal.
How bad is it?
They are seeing 20 to 40% yields, meaning the majority of what they produce goes straight in the trash.
Wow. And the cost to produce a chip that way must be astronomical compared to a standard process.
Oh, it is. It costs 40, 50% more than it would for a company like TSMC to manufacture the exact same chip. But SMIC is doing it anyway. They are absorbing that massive cost premium to prioritize these chips for Huawei's AI processors.
Just to have them.
Yeah, traditional profit margins become completely secondary when national strategy dictates that you must have domestic AI computing power. Survival and self-reliance are the only metrics being measured right now.
That's intense. And former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim points out how this creates a complex, double-edged sword for countries caught in the middle of the supply chain, like South Korea.
Right.
Their major semiconductor companies are enjoying the massive profit windfalls of rising memory chip prices due to the AI boom. Mm. But simultaneously, their profit margins are being aggressively eaten away by the rising costs of those upstream raw materials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the gases, the capacitors, the PCB materials.
Exactly. And physics and economics on this scale inevitably trigger a geopolitical reaction. Every adaptation in this constrained tech race creates a ripple effect across borders, which forces other nations to adjust their strategies in real time.
So let's look at how the geopolitical chessboard is shifting in response to this hyper-optimized software and massive physical infrastructure push. Starting with the U.S. and sticking strictly to the facts reported in the sources, the U.S. Commerce Department recently executed a major tactical reversal.
They did, yeah.
They had initially placed strict export restrictions on Anthropic's powerful AI models, Fable 5 and Mythos 5. But after just 18 days, they completely lifted those restrictions.
And the mechanics behind that reversal offer a textbook example of the open source vacuum effect.
Yeah, the report details that the initial ban, which was driven by prior administration policies, inadvertently accelerated a massive shift away from U.S. tech.
Right.
American developers suddenly couldn't access the Anthropic models they relied on, so they needed an immediate alternative, and they flocked in droves to Chinese open source models, specifically ZPU GLM 5.2. By trying to protect their proprietary tech, they just handed developer mindshare over to a foreign open source competitor.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you know, software is liquid by nature. If you place a dam in a stream, the water doesn't stop flowing. It rapidly finds a new path of least resistance.
Right.
You cannot ban software in a vacuum without an open source alternative instantly filling the void. The U.S. only reversed course after Anthropic agreed to specific security reporting standards. They realized that keeping American developers inside the U.S. software ecosystem was far more critical than the initial restriction.
That liquid, unpredictable nature of software is exactly why other players are taking a completely different, physically grounded approach. I mean, South Korea isn't trying to out-hack the open source community. They are dropping a staggering 800 trillion won mega investment.
It's unbelievable.
That is roughly 518 billion U.S. dollars driven by Samsung, SK Hynix, and their partners to build four massive new fabs and inject billions into advanced packaging clusters.
They are building a physical fortress to counter the software strategy. China is relying on brute-forcing older hardware at SMIC, combined with world-class software optimization. South Korea's counter move is to create a fully unified physical ecosystem.
By putting everything together.
Yeah, exactly. By placing memory manufacturing, foundry processing, and advanced packaging physically right next to each other in one cluster, they completely eliminate the latency and transit costs of moving chips around the world during production. They are betting that absolute unified hardware efficiency will ultimately outpace any software optimizations.
Wow. So what does this all mean? We've covered a massive amount of ground today. And if there is one core through line to everything lawyer Kyungjin Kim provided in this report, it is that severe constraints breed incredible, sometimes terrifying, innovation. We saw DeepSeek figure out how to squeeze 85% more speed out of limited chips by having smaller AI models draft the work. We saw how that relentless software efficiency is powering a robotics industry that can build border patrol droids and hyper-real companions for 30 to 50% less than the global average.
Right.
And we explored how the physical strain of building this new world is spiking the price of the most basic industrial components, forcing countries to completely rethink their supply chains.
Yeah.
It is all deeply connected in this new, highly constrained AI arms race.
And we have spent this entire deep dive exploring how software developers and robot manufacturers are optimizing their code, cutting their physical costs, and rewriting their logistics simply to survive a severe lack of top-tier hardware. But it leaves us with a critical, unsettling question to consider moving forward.
What's that?
What happens to the global balance of technological power on the day those hardware constraints are eventually lifted and all of that hyper-optimized, incredibly lean software is suddenly unleashed on next-generation, unrestricted chips?
Man, that is a wild thought to leave on. If they are moving this fast while forcing a smaller delivery truck to its absolute limits, what happens when someone finally hands them the keys to the fastest engine on the track?
Exactly.
The entire nature of the race changes overnight. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the forces shaping our technological future. Keep questioning the systems around you, and we warmly invite you back for our next exploration. Until then, keep digging.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.